TH, I guess. I mean, I have to confess, I'm a bit afraid of religious people. The funny thing, I mean, is that I happen to have spent my whole life as a servant of God, a devotee of God. And yes, if you ask me what I am, I mean, essentially what I am, then that would be the answer. And yet I sit here at a mature age of 70 almost, realizing I'm a little bit afraid of religious people. And I'll tell you why. For instance, well, I think it started actually with my grandmother, because she was very religious Christian. One of the more heavy branches of it. So she was always stern, and we felt also like, oh, there was always something wrong with us kids, especially I guess just old-fashioned. But as a kid, well, I didn't like religion at all. And I think that was a little bit, at least, maybe a bigger bit, the cause of that dislike. But, and of course, priests and the religion teacher, and a certain, you know, because I was and still am a independent-minded Swedish guy who go my own way. I didn't like that demanding that I go their way, or there's something wrong with me. And then, you know, ironically, I was active for more than 20 years in what they call themselves now, I think, a religious group. That output that very same message: if you're not part of our group, there's something wrong with you. And even more ironically, I was myself doing that, I think. Because I was kind of a preacher type in that group. So, yeah, and here I am at old age. And feeling very uncomfortable with that, including that group I was part of. Was active in myself, but now I'm, how to say, affiliated with but not active in. You know, still sharing, I would say, of course, the philosophical ideals and again the nice lifestyle of simply wanting to be a servant of God and all of God's children. You know, to me, that's what it's about, not being a member of a certain group. So when I say I'm afraid of religion, that's a bit what I'm talking about. When someone takes, you know, maybe some really nice teachings, wisdom, or guidance from some very wise people, maybe way back or recently, and you know, that can really benefit us and help us in our lives, and turn it into, again, I mean, you know, this Emperor Constantine, anyway. Yeah, let's take these teachings of Jesus Christ and make a state religion out of it that I can use to unify my people and go out to war much more powerfully, or whatever he thought. But they were, well, seems like it was in those days these religious wars really started, because you had the Muslims there coming up, Muhammad appearing, and well, again, you know, another nice devotee of God and teacher and wise man. And the funny thing is that they were the Abrahamic religious Judaism and Christianity and, well, Islam too, in a way. I don't know. I mean, it seems like they came from a bit same roots there, didn't they? Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Then they start fighting each other. Of course, they were, as far as I understood, mainly fighting Persian Zoroastrianism, which was quite powerful and dominant in that area, it seems, back a few hundred years after Christ, or when, probably that was there long before. But anyway, you know, we can look at history like that. And then you hear these, see, because I encountered quite a few Christians out on the streets when I was out there doing some preaching work of some kind for bhakti yoga. Not spreading a religion, but spreading some good philosophy, old wisdom books from India. It was not uncommon that you got one of those Christian fanatics hanging after you for hours. Just going, you know, repent, and warning people for you. Don't speak to him, it's of the devil. And, you know, such people I am a bit afraid of. Because if they think, you know, that those people over there in India, or those people over there in China, or those people down there in Africa, or those, you know, those people over there in that country, or even in that part of our country, they don't have the same faith the same religious faith as I have. Therefore, they are the children of the devil. They're following the devil instead of following God. And I mean, that statement in itself is probably, I mean, it seems like a bit what characterizes these kind of religions in the negative sense, these systems, because they are really social systems. It's not that, you know, speaking bad about Muhammad, I mean, or Jesus or Buddha or whoever, Moses. I'm sure these were all wonderful, wise people who were teaching us very good things. And I mean, that's why their teachings stayed through history, isn't it? I mean, people appreciated them. And I don't think, you know, you're a spiritual leader, you're walking around saying, we're going to kill everyone else who is not our religion, or fight all the other gods. Is that what's happening up there on that higher heavenly level, that the gods are fighting each other? Even heavier, more serious fights than we can ever have here. I mean, we can make nuclear bombs, but what cannot gods do? So, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a very earthly, I would say, yeah, kind of materially contaminated form of religion or spirituality, which you wonder, where is the spirituality when it gets to this point? Because spirituality means that you have respect for each other, and we are all friends and kind and compassionate and merciful and honest, and just want to be a good servant of God and your fellow beings. That's what I consider a spiritually mature person, right? It's a matter of how we live and act and are and our way of being, not what we believe in. And now we're there. It's not just going on in religion, it's in politics and all kinds of places, even sports, I guess, although that I'm kind of out of that. But, you know, okay, so you got the big guys there and girls who, they're in control of all the global media. No one even noticed. And that's the most powerful thing for controlling the world. You control people's minds. Even George Orwell and Aldous Huxley, they knew that and taught us that. So let's just do what they write. I mean, and then now I keep seeing these really strange messages coming out there from politicians, from leaders of societies in Europe and I guess the US, yeah. I mean, words that to me when I was young you expected from coming from the mouths of the leaders of the totalitarian countries over there in the East. But now they're coming from there instead. That if you even, this guy says it plainly, if you are on Twitter or X, for instance, I guess it goes for all the other of those social media, or whatever they're called nowadays, and someone has made a post there that you like, if you repost it, you know, click on that little round arrow thing, and I don't even know what happens. I guess that means others can see, but who looks at my tweet anyway? So, but okay, I'll click on that. Basically, because I kind of sympathized with or liked that video, whatever it was. Now, this man says that if that video that you just clicked on and shared or whatever, retweeted, does not contain information that is authorized by the government, basically, that's what he's saying. I mean, that is good and true and... but information that we, your leaders, consider well, not only a risk to our society, a threat, you know, what do you call it? Active treason, I think they even use that expression. Especially if you yourself are a bit powerful or something, or well-known journalist, politician. But even an act of terror, and they have this word, information terrorism. And most people don't even know that, but, you know, what it means is, you know, a terrorist, if you are declared a terrorist in a country, especially over in the West there, the government can do whatever they want with you, basically kill you with no court case needed or anything. It's a very, very heavy course, you could say, to get on you. And you could get that by clicking on, I mean, in principle, and sharing or retweeting the wrong thing, or you know, sharing a YouTube video, or maybe even subscribing to a channel. I don't know, I mean, how far they can go. But this tendency, this kind of attitude, phew. Well, you know, maybe it's soon time to step over into the undernet, as they call it. Well, not the dark net, it's a pretty murky place, but maybe the overnet. Make our own. Because you see, the truth about this internet, which I realize that many people today maybe don't even know, but to me it's obvious because I was there when the internet came, basically, and before the internet came. So I know how it works, and I'm a certified network technician and system administrator. I know what it is. I know what the network protocol is. The IP and all, TCP, I mean, all that, right? So the internet as really a free forum, a free network, media network, where we can, each one of us, send messages, text, images, video, sound, all kinds of things to each other. But then the other ironic thing that really shows how we humans function, like a herd of sheep, I mean, really, some people, just by having money, being good at propaganda and buying up guys and girls with good ideas, created entire continents out there. We don't need to mention any names, but you know, you have these strange corporations that just popped out of nowhere. I mean, just some guy or a couple of kids, basically, who just sat there in their room hacking some code, coding some cool stuff, and then some business-minded person coming, taking that, and wow, look at this, make money and sell, and it grew explosively, and then being to the extent of being like nations or continents, where billions of people spend a considerable amount of their time every day with the most important parts of themselves, which are not these fleshy, bony bodies that we're carrying around, but the actual conscious living person. The person in there who is the one that decides what the body then will do, if it will go out there and shoot someone else or go out there and do something nice for someone else. I mean, it's kind of obvious, isn't it? So just that. Therefore, someone, I'm just reading a book about it, someone explained it the way that we have our capitalism and democracy and all of those fine things, communist, social, I mean, I don't know about them, maybe they are the only ones that are on the other side. But this capitalism and liberalism and democracy and all that fine stuff, it's turning into, at least large parts of it, or to a large extent, being replaced by a kind of global intra-continental even form of feudalism. Feudalism, as we know, means when you, it's not that everyone is free to do their own thing, and each country, you know, that's how it was in the old days. Each village or town, they mind their own business, or region, but you know, we were all friends, leaving each other in peace and taking care of ourselves. But someone else comes in and says, no, all this land belongs to us and we will help you. You just work for us. You're a member of our country now. Our soldiers will protect you. You can still live on this land. Keep your farms, but pay taxes to us. So, I mean, what have we now? Well, it's of a different kind, of course, but, you know, presidents have become presidents because of this social media, and wars have been fought because of this social media. I mean, these are powerful, you know, big events. And I'll say, not, I guess, many with me, but do say that, well, you know, if we go on like this, maybe the large majority not understanding the power of media, and the other little part really understand the power of media and use it for those who pay the best to basically shape the universe in any way they want for the people living in that, you know, they are the end of that, those media. I mean, phew. I mean, if we could just, you know, I'm talking to us ordinary girls and guys here. If we can just understand, I mean, you and me, I've been trying to, I mean, I happen to live with media since I was young and have seen how media has changed from, you know, newspapers, magazines, state-controlled television and radio, books. Record players and tape recorders to this. And when you just learn enough about this, see the situation, wake up and become, you know, that's what we need to do. We need to wake up, not just sit ignorant and stupid and dull. With our eyes and minds sucked into those screens that are designed now. You see, behind those screens that I don't know how to say it. You see, when I started with computers, it was in 1980 something, or. Yeah. When you turn on one of those things, those screens, monitors, it was just black with a little green C down at the left bottom corner. You had to then use that thing to do what you wanted to do. And that was cool, that was good, because you could do a lot of things. So yeah, I made a magazine after a few years there. We made radio with them, databases to care of, subscription lists, and all these cool things. Because it was a machine that you could do things with much more efficiently and without a lot of physical machinery. Like, yeah, dark rooms and things. So anyway, to me, well, to me, it then really is completely clear to see what, you know, and I studied psychology too, and I'm actually a hypnotherapist. I've been doing things in my life, So, you know, when you know a little of this feel and that feel, and then you put things together and you look at the big picture of the world, you go like, what? What happened? Because now when you turn on a screen, you're like, poof, right in there in someone's ecosystem. If you have one of those, you know, Apple-ish phones, then whoops, you see certain things. And you don't even notice it, but it leads in certain directions. You need a web browser, and it's built into that phone that it used to be called, that screen. And you click on it, and it used to be a search engine that just looked for the most common, or basically, yeah, all the web pages that contain the words we were looking for, and the biggest ones or the most common ones that came up first, which, you know, it's useful, right? But now what happens is that it will give you that which someone there considers that you should look at. Well, there will be algorithms there trying to figure out what you like to look at, depending on what you did so far. Which I also thought when all this came that this would be good. So that's fine. But then all that information then, because if they can learn, those machines over there, what you like and what you don't like, they can build a psychological profile of you. And the thing is that this one already exists. And that's what this Mr. Snowden and others, I would say, proved and can prove. And you just listen to what they say and read their writings, and you know what I'm talking about. So, psychology, our minds. So we need to, you need to, I need to put yourself in charge of your mind. You know, in India you have yoga there. You have this nice wisdom, really, and it's there. Not just the Indian culture, but in many old original cultures, I would say real cultures on this planet, that, and real wisdom, that, you know, we here, me living here, can be compared to five horses dragging a cart or wagon, where I sit as a passenger and those five horses are the five senses and the reins that the driver holds. It's the mind, and the driver is intelligence. So if the intelligence is not strong and can't control those horses, they will just run here and there completely wildly, and anything can happen. So, but today, you can realistically, that if you don't have that intelligence today, which really means also that you learn, and there's some knowledge of facts, of reality there, not just what someone put on your screens and tell you it's reality. So that's what intelligence means. You have to think about it. Can this really be true? Oh, and let me check it out here, the facts. How do you check facts? Well, there are certain things. It's harder and harder nowadays, of course, but ultimately, it also, you know, you have different people there who you can respect and who are really learned and who can really present facts in such a way that you can verify them yourself. This is called science. So that's how science should work. Not just serving huge corporations to make new patent chemicals and technology for them or whatever, or psychology for their psychological applications for their media and their screens. So that's where it all starts. Use the intelligence, and that's what we're trying to do. I'm trying my best here. Giving pointers also, you know, this something like this is how it looks for me. I'm giving the facts. I will cite sources all over the place here, and you can find them in the comment in the description below here, because it's important that we learn to do that. And you shouldn't just listen to me because I'm great now, but you know, the new Guruji, come on, let's learn, let's get beyond that. This is neophyte worship mentality. And then you go out and fight the others who are not having the same starry eyes as you do, or the same kind of stars in them. So, but you know, first of all then, if I may give an advice, and I'm giving it to myself, to take control over that screen that you have in front of your face now. And first of all, you can make yourself aware of this is basically cognitive therapy. Take a piece of paper and a pen and write down how many hours a day you spend looking at a screen. You may be surprised. You can even set nowadays your screen, if it's a mobile thing, to report, but mine does that daily, how many hours I spent looking at it. And it's more than you think, and I'm not looking at it very much. That's how I feel. So first of all, that, and I'm not saying it's wrong to look at a screen. If you read, you can read a very, very good book on a screen. You can create something, pictures, programs, games, videos, music, write books. You can do wonderful things with these screens. But that's the next step. What are you watching on that or those screens during the day? That could be the next step in that cognitive therapy lesson, homework. And you may be surprised there too, and therefore I am over and over again emphasizing this, because it is a fact that, you know, the little game there, the little social media thing there, this and that, even, you know, the videos you look at there. Well, sometimes they are made by sincere people who just want to give something good to you, to us. Which I think that's how we should use this, because if we can all do it. I mean, you can speak just the way I'm speaking, put it on some kind of media out there. So it's easy, really, and don't be afraid of having your opinion and your point of view. I think that's really what we need today, both to exercise our freedom of speech, which I still hope and think we have, don't we? Or where in the world are you living? Or maybe they already told you that freedom of speech is not a good thing, so you should just accept. Yes, because if I'm free to say what I want, then I can say things that hurt others. So therefore I should only be allowed, of course, to say that which is legal. So that's the direction it's going. And well, if you like that, then, well, you found your home. But some may not, including myself. So, but you know, we may think, oh, what can I do? We are controlled by the big and powerful and super smart. We are the herd of sheep. But, you know, what do you expect us to do? We can't do anything. Well, you can, because let's say, you know, if everyone of us, everyone who listens to this, I don't know how many there will be, 10 people or 10 million people, I want a billion people to listen to it, but, you know, well, you should shoot for the rhinoceros, as, well, some said. But aim high and you hit a higher target than if you would aim lower, up to a certain extent. But anyway, if we, for instance, I'm just thought experiment here. If all of us just get out there, do the little learning. It's not much learning, actually, to make your own YouTube video. You can just basically record with your mobile screen here with a camera in it. It's a camera. You can use it for making videos and pictures and publish yourself and make a YouTube channel or Rumble channel if YouTube gets too controlled. And, you know, that's the thing I wanted to say, that we should also spread the good word about, because this is a fact, that the internet, see, it was originally designed as a military network. anyway, the whole technology of it. A network that you can't take down. You can't destroy it. Because if you cut one line here, from here to this other city, the information will crawl, find other ways to crawl around. So it would be very, very difficult to remove the internet, to close it down. You can take control over the IP addresses and the domain names that people have. But, you know, they have already appeared alternative such IP, you know, system, IP addresses, I don't know, but yeah, alternative solutions. That, so there are always ways to set up servers out there that, you know, have distributed database or whatever, and set up a DNS system, if you know what that is. So you can make your own internet, and you can make your own social media. Yes, there are. It's pretty easy, actually. You can download tools, so you can set up your own Facebook, basically, for free, if you have a server that costs, you know, 20, 30 euros a month or something. So, I mean, the opportunities, even if the big boys and girls are trying to make a totalitarian internet. We don't have to play along with that. And it would be very, very hard for anyone to stop us if we want to go into another direction than their social media platforms or whatever, or using their phones or using their screens. Because there is, you know, the ones who made this to start with, this whole internet, are generally idealistic people who like to write cool code, and therefore they invented something called open source. And you know, another cool thing is that, just think about it, how much everything in our societies today are depending on computers, right? The whole internet, of course. All these screens we have, they're depending on servers somewhere. The AI, the new cool AI things, they're depending on heavy, heavy, heavy servers that suck so much electricity as an entire nation, I heard, at least soon. So, question, what's the use of that? But the cool thing are the all these internet servers out there. And servers that are, some people don't even know what servers are, but in offices, you more often than not have a server. In libraries, in banks, in military systems, in energy facilities, it's a server running the whole digital network that is necessary, you know, necessary for running that facility. But the thing is that those who are there, who built all that and who know how it all works and who therefore control it all, are those sometimes interesting characters. Coders, hackers, you know, some of them are hackers, meaning that they are a bit of a different subculture, a little outside of society, and you never really know what they are. So that can really make up a good story. For the next Netflix series, which we happen to be writing at this moment. Yep. Anyway, yeah, I think this is a good beginning. If you could follow this, yeah, you need to have a certain level. I mean, not all of us are brain types. I don't even want to call it brain, but intelligent. And that's, I mean, it's a. Some are more intelligent and some are more, you know, simple-minded, but very good at something else. I mean, we are different, just like that. Some are intellectual, some are business-minded, and some are workers, and some are, you know, the whole thing. That's how we are here. So, yes, I'm speaking mainly to some kind of intelligentsia, probably the real intelligentsia. I think I am some primitive. Neanderthal person, but I'm just trying my best here. I think that's where we stay for today. you noticed, right? I gave you some homework. Yes. For your own self-improvement. This is today's lesson. I mean, it's good to be practical. Number one, how many hours a day do you spend in front of a screen? Study yourself, yes. Get your ass out of the armchair and take charge of your life. That's step number one. Number two, what are you looking at and listening to on those screens and in those headphones? Approximately what percentage of each? And then we could add, who does this information that you get, or whatever message, or whatever pictures, or whatever sound that you get, message that you get, story that you get, information that you get, who is giving you that? Where does it come from? Most of it. It takes a little work to those three to really check the situation there. That's fact checking, I would say, on a very fundamental platform here in this media that we should do. Because, you know, when someone says there on your screen that the fact checkers are telling you it is like this and not like that, we have checked the facts, so you just, you know, don't try to share this kind of thing because we have decided it is false. Maybe, I mean, it happened to me a couple of times when I shared something forbidden. But so I say, again, look at, you know, how clever some are, but I'm saying you should be the fact checker. My lady, my sir, young or old, be the fact checker yourself. And the first fact is, look at yourself, your own daily life. Are you walking with the sheep? Are you just blindly, uncritically following the dogs that are pushing your herd in the direction that someone there that you hardly even see, herdsman or herdswoman or, well, or are you an independent-minded, critically thinking, intelligently acting and assessing and evaluating your own life and the world you live in? What is right, what is wrong, what is true, what is false, what is reality, what is illusion? That is really, actually, according to the old Indian Vedic knowledge I read there in one of those books, wisdom books, that this is was a definition of intelligence that was given, this exactly that ability to distinguish between those things. So yeah, I guess that's our work for today. And I should also look at this actually, because let's see if I can do it. Let's see if anyone else can. See you back here in a week or so.